I was thinking about today and about speaking today, and I imagined ourselves beside the lake. And I thought, well, there's got to be some stories in the Bible that have to do with, you know, sort of a picnic atmosphere, right? So I was thinking through different stories in the Bible, and I'm thinking, well, there was a 40-year picnic in the desert for the children of Israel. They may not have thought it to be a picnic, but I was thinking more of some of the picnics that Jesus was a part of. And we think of the feeding of the 5,000. That was beside the lake, and it had food, and everybody sat down in the grass and ate, and they were organized, and it was a pretty special picnic. And then again, just after that, the feeding of the 4,000. So some pretty major picnics in the Bible. And if you think of Jesus, he did a lot of his ministry outside. A lot of his ministry was outside. He did spend time in people's homes. He did spend time in synagogues. And he did spend time in the temple. But most of the time, he was outside. And they were picnicking along the way, whether that was eating somebody else's grain from their grain fields as they walked through the land, or whether it was catching some fish from the lake, whatever. I think they had a lot of picnics. They may not have considered them picnics, but picnics are generally the kind of thing that we like to do in summertime. So as I was reading, and my reading was taking me through the book of Luke, and I came to this story of Peter and Jesus teaching the people beside the lake. And the people were crowding him, and so he got into a boat, and it was Peter's boat, and he went out in a little distance into the lake, and he taught the people from the lake. And I figured, well, we probably wouldn't be that big a crowd beside the lake this morning and wouldn't need to push out into the water in order not to get pushed into the water. We wouldn't have to preach from the boat. But that got me thinking about Peter and about his life. And so I sort of want to talk a little bit about Peter today. And some of the incidents, some of his relationship with Jesus, particularly the stories that are contained in the Gospels. We know that Peter's story goes on in the book of Acts, and he actually writes a couple of epistles, and so his life goes on. But there's some interesting things I want to point out about Peter's life today. Peter's first encounter with Jesus wasn't near where he lived. It was probably closer to the Jordan River where John the Baptist was baptizing. And that story is contained in John chapter 1 and around verse 40. Andrew, Peter's brother, was a disciple of John the Baptist. And Andrew and another disciple, probably John, went to find out where this person, Jesus, lived. Because John the Baptist had said, "That is the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." And so they knew about Jesus, they were interested in him, and they followed him, and they found out where he lived. And then Andrew comes back, and he says, "Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, 'We have found the Messiah,' that is the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. So Andrew brought Peter to Jesus and said, "We've found the Messiah." Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. So Peter's first encounter with Jesus, he was renamed Peter, the Rock. Peter grew up around the Lake of Galilee. Bethsaida could have been his home. It was quite a Greek town, and then ultimately Capernaum was his home. He was a fisherman. He was a rugged fisherman. Probably came from a fairly devout family, Israelite family, but not trained in the law. He apparently was literate. He could read and write. He was interested in John the Baptist, but not one of his disciples, most likely. And here Andrew tells him, "This is the Messiah." So every good Jewish boy, every Jewish family would have in as a foundation of their understanding of God and who God was, that the Messiah was one day going to come. So here, Andrew says, we have found the Messiah. And this is what Peter is confronted with. Really? So this must have interested him a whole lot more. I've got all my notes pasted in my Bible so that the wind won't blow them away. It looks like Peter's second encounter with Jesus was in his own home. Jesus left the synagogue and went to the home of Simon. Now Simon's, this is from Luke chapter 4 and verse 38. Now Simon's mother-in-law, so now we find out Peter's married. He's got a home in Capernaum. Peter's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. So he bent over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her. She got up at once and began to wait on them. So, amazing. Jesus is now in Peter's home, and he heals Peter's mother-in-law. The next one is the account I've already mentioned, where Jesus ends up in Peter's boat, and that's in Luke chapter 5, starting at verse 1. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, which is the lake of Galilee, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. And he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Now, I think perhaps Simon's beginning to feel a little bit special. He's using my boat. And Simon probably is the one who's taking the boat out, who is, rowing or whatever he has to do to his boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, we will let down the nets." So I'm thinking, Peter's probably thinking, Jesus, you're not a fisherman. But if you say so, we'll do this. And so they did, and when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on the shore and left everything and followed him. So when Jesus tells Simon to go fishing and they get this amazing amount of fish, Simon is actually overwhelmed. He realizes Jesus is somebody he was no ordinary man. Who is this? It's interesting that Jesus tells him to don't be afraid. What do you think in Peter's reaction, "Go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man"? What in that statement do you think indicated that Peter was afraid? I've been thinking about that. I don't know if it's true, but I'm thinking, suddenly if Jesus knows that there's all these fish that they can catch probably at the wrong time of day, then Jesus must know a whole lot more. He probably knows everything about me, Peter's thinking, and he knows that I'm a sinful man. And Jesus says, "Don't be afraid," and ultimately tells him, "I'm going to make you fishers of men, fishers of people," and he assigns Peter. So Peter's hooked, and he leaves everything and follows Jesus. Continue here for a bit. So Peter's following Jesus. They go all over the country. He listens to Jesus' teachings. observe Jesus as he's healing all these people. Observe some amazing deliverances. This demoniac that lived by himself out on the side of the lake and delivered from all these demons, and suddenly he's a different person. They encountered a funeral procession where a little dead boy was being taken out, the only son of his widowed mother. And Jesus, or Peter and all the other disciples see that Jesus raises this little boy out of the coffin and he lives again. Peter is one of the three who actually gets to go into this bedroom where this little girl of 12 years old has died and observes Jesus bringing her back to life. So he's observing all this activity of Jesus, this amazing, miraculous activity. And then one day they're out on the lake. This is after the picnic of the 5,000. And Jesus goes up the mountain to pray and leaves the disciples to go across the lake by themselves. And they're on the boat and the storm comes up. And somewhere after midnight, Jesus walks out on the water to them and they see him and they're terribly afraid. And Peter's so impulsive. Immediately when they realize this is Jesus, it's not a ghost. What is Peter's reaction? Jesus says, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." Who would think of that? There's some impulsive people in our midst, but not everybody would probably think that way. "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Peter's so impulsive. But the minute he takes his eyes off Jesus, he begins and looks at what's happening around him, which is pretty scary, he begins to sink, not unlike us. They are walking around the country and they travel from one coast, from around the Lake of Galilee, back and forth between Galilee and Jerusalem. They go to the Mediterranean coast, and this time they are way up northeast in Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus asks them a question. This is in Matthew 16, verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" And they replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." And then comes that controversial passage that is always a bit hard to understand about what was going to be Peter's role in the formation of the early church. Anyways, Jesus tells Peter that this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood. You didn't figure this out on your own. This has to be revealed to you by God, by the Father, by the Holy Spirit. So we're just realizing that any one of us who believes that Jesus is the Messiah, the coming one, the one that was supposed to come, that Jesus is the Son of God, that can only be revealed to us, become clear to us by the Spirit. Then Jesus goes on to predict Peter's prominent role in the early church. However, just after that incident, Jesus tells them what's going to happen to him. And this is in Matthew chapter 16 as well. "From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter knew better. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said. This shall never happen to you. And Peter, along with the rest of the disciples, gets a pretty strong rebuke. Jesus turned to him and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." So Peter had lots to learn. Their expectation wasn't that Jesus was going to have to suffer and die. Their expectation was, this is it. The Messiah is here, and things are going to change. Things are going to get better. God had other things in mind and always had other things in mind. And Peter needs to come into that understanding. So things continue to the Last Supper. And at the Last Supper, in the Gospel of John, there's an account that isn't in the other Gospels, and it's having to do with Jesus getting up and becoming the servant. So they didn't have a servant in attendance who would wash their feet. So Jesus gets up, puts a towel around his waist, and starts washing the disciples' feet. Well, what's Peter's reaction? He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." So Peter's all in, just like that. And Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you," for he knew who was going to betray him. So Peter's reaction, why did Peter have that kind of reaction? Why did he not want Jesus to wash his feet? What do you think? It's a little humbling, maybe, to have somebody wash your feet. I mean, in our culture, we wouldn't just have to remove our sandals. We have to remove our socks and our shoes. Our shoes and our socks, right? I'm thinking, it's hard to have somebody do something for you. And it's even harder to have somebody who has an amazing reputation, who you really respect and honor, to humble himself and do something for you. It's hard to be on the receiving end. And I think Peter maybe felt a little bit guilty. He said, "I should be the one washing everybody's feet, not Jesus." And so he said, "No, don't do it to me." And then Jesus explains to him, there's something else that's happening here besides just foot washing. And the fact that he needed washing, we walk in a dirty world every day, and you need continually to have your feet washed. "But you are clean," he said, "you're clean." How did, you know, you often wonder about that. We think we need to come to Jesus to have our sins forgiven, to receive Jesus into our heart. What happened to the disciples? How did they know? Did they know their sins were forgiven? How did they know that their sins were forgiven? Well, Jesus always was talking about forgiving sins. He could heal as well as forgive sins. That was the big deal with the Pharisees, was that how, you know, he was healing, but who but God has the authority to forgive sins? And so I'm sure that all the disciples had a pretty good understanding of what it meant to have their sins forgiven, all except, apparently, Judas. So Peter, I think, had an understanding of what it was to be clean, but to need continually being cleansed from living in a dirty world. Just about at the end here, so this is at the Last Supper, and at the Last Supper, another thing that Jesus confronts Peter about is the fact that he's going to actually deny Jesus. "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. But he replied, Simon replied, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death. Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny three times that you know me. So Jesus predicts Peter's denial. Peter is full of self-confidence. This will never happen. But we know it did. And there's one account that talks about Peter denying Jesus for the third time. And Jesus actually, somewhere where he was being tried, could see Peter and actually looked at him. And I just wonder what kind of a look that was. It broke Peter up. We know that. We know that he left and went out and wept bitterly. I was thinking about that today when we were singing that song that Judith led us in. Does you guys have a sheet there? Broken Vessels, that song. Oh, I can see you now. Oh, I can see the love in your eyes, laying yourself down, raising up the broken to life. So I don't think it was a condemning look that Jesus gave Peter at that time. It was a look of compassion, sadness, probably disappointment, that kind of thing. But no doubt, a look of love. And ultimately, Peter experienced that look of love again and again later in life, especially after Jesus had been raised from the dead. We come to one final incident between Jesus and Peter, and that's again beside the lake. This time, Jesus has been raised from the dead, and Peter is out on the lake again, fishing. Jesus' death, his resurrection had just taken place. Peter was confused. I think Peter was confused. He was disillusioned. I don't think he was certain at all about what really was happening. And in his state of what is happening, he wants to go back to what he knows is familiar. Let's go fishing. And they all agree with him. So they were all together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them, and they said, we'll go with you. So they all went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. This time the nets didn't break, and they actually counted them, 153. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off and jumped into the water. Usually when you jump into the water, you take some clothes off, right? Well, Peter did it the opposite way around, whatever meaning that is. He was pretty excited to see Jesus, and whether he was dragged down by all his heavy clothes or not, he got to Jesus, and he met Jesus face to face again on the shore of the Lake of Galilee. And then, of course, we have that same incident talks about Jesus being confronted, or Peter being confronted by Jesus, do you love me? And Peter says, you know I love you. What he was really saying, you know I like you a lot. I have great affection for you, but I don't know if I have God's kind of love for you. I don't know if I have unconditional love for you. And of course, Jesus asks him this three times. Peter replies three times. And finally, Jesus replies in Peter's kind of language. He says, I know you have lots of affection for me and you like me. I still want you to do something for me. And so Peter is very unsure of himself. And I'm just wanting to apply his situation to us today. We've all experienced Jesus' touch. To know that Jesus is actually interested in me, that's amazing. I remember Jerry Dennell's story that he told us a few weeks ago, and how he talked about his sister coming to know Jesus and then introducing him to Jesus. And he think, well, he was doing drugs. Jesus would not be interested in me. But he asked, he came to Jesus anyways and realized that that wasn't the case. Jesus was interested in him. He knows Peter's name. He knows our name. He doesn't know our given name. He knows who we really are. He renamed Peter in terms of his destiny. And I think he renames each one of us in terms of our destiny. I'm thinking we should all do that someday. Ask God, what do you think of me? Jesus, what do you think of me? What is my name? What is the destiny? What is my destiny? How do you really see me? We've all experienced his cleansing. You are clean, even if still faulty, or half-hearted, or double-minded, or distracted, sometimes downright wayward and rebellious. He knows our weakness. That's why I want to sing that song again. The last song that we sang, I think, is so applicable to what we're talking about. We've all experienced his power. He's done for us what we could not do for ourselves. He's healed us. He's restored us. Often he has orchestrated our circumstances in our favor. And it's been his power. Yet often, like Peter, we see ourselves as unworthy. Go away from me. I'm not worthy of you. Often, like Peter, we have taken our eyes off of him and looked around at our circumstances and begun to sink. And often, we're not sure if we really love him. If we could really say from the bottom of our hearts, make that claim, I love you, Lord. But we say it anyway. He renames us. He calls us, and ultimately we get to work with him. He calls us into what he is doing in this world. That is so amazing. And so I'd just like to sing that song. Get your guitar and we'll sing that song again. Just in terms of what we have come to understand. Identifying ourselves with Peter a lot. I do it all the time because I know I'm impulsive. I can quickly say yes to something, and then I realize not long after that, I've forgotten what I've said. I've forgotten my commitment, that kind of thing. So.